Madame Tussauds and the French Revolution, The Great Necklace Scandal, Part 1. No contemporary queen in Europe, except Marie Antoinette of France, could have found herself embroiled in such a bizarre and damaging affair as the scandal of the diamond necklace. For no other queen had earned herself such a widespread reputation for light conduct, extravagance, imprudence, and excessive love of diamonds. Marie Grosholtz could scarcely credit the story when it became public. Apart from her contacts with the queen, she was acquainted with two of the other people concerned, and she had scant respect for either, and could never force herself to believe that Marie Antoinette was guilty of such an intrigue. The whole business began in 1784, when Bohmer, the court's jeweler, approached the queen in the confident hope that she would buy a magnificent diamond necklace he had created. He had spent years and a fortune in collecting the gems for this spectacular necklace. It was an extremely showy, ornate necklace with festoons, drops, tassels of diamonds, depending from the collar of exceptionally large stones. The necklace contained more than 640 fine diamonds, and its value was estimated at 1.6 million gold livres. To Bohmer's dismay, Marie Antoinette refused to purchase this glittering array of her favorite stones. However tempted, she did not have enough money in her personal purse and dared not approach the king. On several previous occasions, she had incurred his anger when he had to find the money to purchase jewelry she could not pay for. The jeweler had taken his necklace away, acutely distressed and embarrassed. He himself was heavily in debt, largely through his investment in these stones, and his creditors were pressing. He had been certain the queen would be unable to resist such a splendid addition to her collection, but her refusal was adamant. Bohmer knew that it was almost impossible to find another client who would purchase this costly ornament. As for the queen, she didn't even mention the matter to the king. There were other things to occupy her attention. In March of 1785, Marie Antoinette gave birth to a second son. And of course, there were celebrations on the happy occasion, and there was popular acclaim. Well, 2 months later, Marie Antoinette made a state visit to Paris, and she was indignant and outraged by the frigid reception she got from the people. The ceremonial visit was so ill-received, even aroused international comment. The Queen's Swedish admirer, Axel Fersen, now returned from his services in the American War of Independence, was a witness. Sadly, he wrote to his monarch, King Gustav, that Marie Antoinette had been greeted by complete silence on the part of her Parisian subjects. When she got back to Versailles, the queen retired to her apartments and cried, possibly realizing for the first time the immense gulf between herself and the people, though she was still unable to comprehend the reasons for their hostility. Her concern, however, was short-lived, as she busied herself with plans and rehearsals for a production of The Barber of Seville, to be acted in the Trianon Theater by her troupe of relatives and friends. She herself would perform the leading part of Rosina. She admired the witty play, though she knew the king detested its author, Beaumarchais, who he had said was only interested in undermining through his writings the authority and dignity of the nobility. Meanwhile, the jeweler, Bohmer, was frantically trying to find some way of getting the queen to buy his necklace. He consulted an attorney friend, who put him in touch with the Comtesse de la Motte Valois. This lady claimed descent from the former Valois kings of France and was the recipient of a small royal pension. She was not, however, received at court and wasn't even known there. This did not prevent Madame de la Motte Valois convincing the jeweler that she was always in attendance at Versailles and was one of the queen's confidants. She told Bohmer that she knew that Marie Antoinette coveted the necklace and suggested she might purchase it through an intermediary. The intermediary might be none other than the great Cardinal Rohan. How could a cardinal be suggested for such a role? In the view of Rohan's history and reputation, it was not far-fetched a notion as it might first appear. The cardinal concerned had been born Prince Louis de Rohan, scion of the large and powerful feudal family whose members held a variety of influential positions at court. Prince Louis, however, embraced the clerical life in spite of his reputation as a dissolute and womanizing young man. He was appointed to assist his uncle, the Bishop of Strasbourg, a provincial position that was not pleasing to an ambitious young priest of excellent family, and he was delighted when in 1772 Louis XV sent him as ambassador to Vienna. Here Louis de Rohan and his staff proved effective in gathering political information useful to France. but his lifestyle, and in particular his conquests of women, both high and low born, incurred several displeasures of the Empress Maria Theresa. She was outraged at his disregard of his priestly calling. When it came to her ears that he was spreading slanderous stories about her daughter Marie Antoinette, she was furious and repeatedly expressed her wish that Louis de Rohan be removed from Vienna. Louis XV took no notice of these accusations against his ambassador, who was both supported by numerous family at court and by his own diplomatic ability and usefulness. But when Louis XV died and Marie Antoinette became queen, one of her first actions was to persuade her husband to recall the ambassador so hated by her mother and disparaging of herself. And she got her way. When Louis de Rohan came back to France for her coronation in 1774, he was coldly told by Louis XVI that he would not be returning to Vienna. Later on, an appointment might be found for him, but for the moment he would return to his clerical duties at the bishopric of Strasbourg. The queen refused to see, let alone speak to him, before his departure to his uncle's provincial see. This virtual disgrace angered the Rohan family. One of them had obtained a promise in writing from Louis XV before he became ill and died that Louis de Rohan should be appointed Grand Almoner of France when the present aging incumbent died. When this happened, the office became vacant. Madame de Marsan, the former governess of the Children of France and the aunt of Louis de Rohan, presented this document to Louis XVI and insisted that she should uphold his grandfather's written promise. Now, the office of Grand Almoner carried with it power and rich emoluments. Marie Antoinette raged in vain against an appointment that would bring the hated cleric back to Versailles, and equally in vain when he received a cardinal's hat on the death of the aged French prelate. All she could do was obstinately to refuse to receive, to speak to, or even set eyes on him if she could avoid it. Cardinal Rohan's ambitions were not yet satisfied, and he realized that the queen's antagonism was blocking his path. Somehow he must figure a way to overcome it. As time passed, the desire to reinstate himself in Marie Antoinette's favor became an undisguised obsession. Of course he denied he had ever spoken disparagingly about her in Vienna, and he was received by other members of the royal family. Urbane and witty, Cardinal Rohan was a frequent visitor to Madame Elizabeth's retreat in Montreuil, and Marie often encountered him there. Though she acknowledged his charms and courtesy, she had too much experience of the world not to recognize an ambitious man when she saw one. But even her gentle sister-in-law's friendship with the cardinal could not soften the queen's hostility. All this being common knowledge, it did not seem ridiculous to the jeweler Bulmer that the queen might consider using Cardinal Rohan as an intermediary to effect a purchase of jewelry that she could not afford and the king would not approve. The cardinal was wealthy and would do anything to get Marie Antoinette's favor. Madame de Lamotte, intimate of the queen as Bulmer thought, could approach the cardinal on her royal mistress's behalf. So this was an introduction to our cast of characters. Marie Antoinette, who turned it down. Good thing to get that started. Madame de Lamotte, who says she's at Versailles but isn't, and will be working with a whole bunch of other people to make this scam work. We have the poor jeweler who spent all this money. And Louis XV would have probably bought it, but Louis XVI was not, and now he is desperate for money. So on our next section, we'll see how this transaction comes about. The sources for this: Madame Tussaud and A Life in Wax by Berridge, Madame Tussaud, Her Life and Legacy by Walton, Waxing Methodical, Life and Legend of Madame Tussaud by Berridge, and The French Revolution as Seen by Madame Tussaud by Chapman. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.